Well, hello and welcome to the Vitality Hub podcast. It's me, Elena Kundro, and today we have a special guest, Robin, who is a women's holistic gut and hormones practitioner. Yes. And this is a place for you to grow in your vitality, in your both mental, emotional, spiritual well-being. So today's episode is going to be about women's hormones, the different cycles, the different phases of hormones on the cycle, how to navigate perimenopause, candida. I'm sure there'll be much more because Robin has worked in this field for how many years?
Over 8 years.
Yeah. So yeah, she does have a lot to offer. Probably we'll do other episodes. So if you have any questions, you can leave them in the comments and we'll do another episode with Robin.
Right.
So to get started, what got you into this field?
It was an inspiration from a traumatic experience, actually, Elena. When I was very young, and I think I was maybe 14, and I saw my mom going through like very traumatic things, and it was never diagnosed as menopause or perimenopause. It was diagnosed as a mental health illness. And she would have horrible panic attacks. We were in a movie theater in Los Angeles, and suddenly she was screaming inside the movie theater. And that was very traumatizing for me. And I'll never forget the movie. It was Anger Management, which was a comedy by Adam Sandler. And my mom was like going crazy in there. And no one knew back then. This was 1990s. No one knew what was going on. It definitely wasn't about hormones back then. It was about mental health. But now, Elena, there's a lot of studies and research that shows that the woman's brain changes in menopause. And there's a very beautiful book right now from one of these doctors, The Menopause Brain. And I think my mother wasn't going through psychosis, or she was crazy, as what, you know, they were saying back then, and they had to put her on antidepressants. I do firmly believe now, based on all of the education I've received, is that she was going through an intense hormonal challenge, fluctuations of estrogen that affected her neurotransmitters and an improper diet. And we both know, Elena, working with nutrition, that diet is probably, if you know how to eat food in your 30s and 40s, and you live a very balanced lifestyle, meaning you exercise, you eat well.
Sleep.
You sleep well, and you know how to self-regulate your emotions, you will have a beautiful journey, a journey of empowerment, a journey of honoring yourself and completely showing, you know, the world who you really are when you reach menopause or even perimenopause. Mm-hmm. So I think the diet, the lifestyle is really 80% of winning the battle already.
Okay, that's very interesting. I didn't know this story. It makes so much sense.
And that triggered me unconsciously, I think, Elena, that, you know, I dived into broadcast media at a younger age, but somehow it just like kicked me, and I said there was always this something about going towards women's health. So it landed me here eventually, and this has been more of also an advocacy of mine, and I really feel that it's a time for us women to be educated and to actually support, you know, truly support each other, sincerely support each other, because this is a phase in the timeline on Earth where, you know, things are really shifting. People are waking up and realizing how valuable health is, that you can never replace your 9 hours a day working in an office and then you don't like it. You know, people are waking up, and we want to get out of that, and we realize our health is the biggest wealth. So that's what led me here now, talking to you.
That's so interesting. And I do feel so much for what you've been through. And I see women in perimenopause, even my clients, that they've been told, oh, just deal with it. You know, it comes and it goes. Right. You just live with it. There's nothing you can change. I think we can get to that. But let's start with the different phases of the cycle, because I feel like that's very important for women of all ages to know, because even the women who are in menopause now, they still have grandchildren, children who are in their active cycles. And that's very important to understand. And for me, really understanding my cycle, I track my temperature and my cycle. And that really allowed me to sync all my workouts, my nutrition,
right,
like traveling, socializing. Now I live by my cycle because I really understand all the different phases. And that helped me so much.
Right.
So can we start there?
Yeah.
What do you start with? The women that come to you, they don't know anything. How do you educate them about that?
So there's such a thing as called awareness, right? And this is the fertility awareness. And there is also fertility awareness method, which women who are ready to have a child, mm-hmm. or even women who are not ready to have a child, and they just want to avoid oral contraceptives. They want to avoid the synthetic hormone. So there is actually a way to track.
Yeah, and that was my reason for doing that.
Right. And that is so powerful, Elena, because the fertility awareness, some women get intimidated by it because it's like, Robin, it seems like it's so hard work. You know, I have to wake up, then I have to take my temperature. But when you think about it, it's not hard work.
It's not.
You wake up. Before getting out of bed, you have your thermometer there, you know, take note.
Yeah, I do the oral.
Yeah, and then just write it down so you're aware. And if you notice that, hey, it's day 13, 14, 15, 16, I'm quite conservative. I would, you know, you're usually fertile on day 14, 15. But if you really want to be conservative, you want to make sure that, okay, well, day 13, 14, those 4 days, I would just leave empty. In case,
well,
right?
That's the thing with the temperature, because I always thought, because I always was using Flow as my app for tracking, and it would say, oh, this is your ovulation day. But when I switched to, I'm now using Natural Cycles,
yes.
and they have a thermometer. You don't have to write anything down. You just put it in your mouth.
And it
syncs with Bluetooth to your app.
Oh, wow.
And it does the whole like graph. I don't need to do anything.
That's even better.
Yeah.
Yeah. My way is kind of old school. Your way is really utilizing technology. And I think that's really fabulous.
Yeah.
It's really
and that showed me when my temperature is actually risen. And I used to feel like I'm feverish was coming from. But actually now
hotter.
I know that's like what's actually happening. So
yeah. So your temperature goes up just 1 degree.
Yeah,
higher when you're fertile, right? And okay, so we'll go through the whole the phases. So first you have your follicular phase. And when we say day one, Elena, that's day one of your bleed. It's the first day you bleed. So it depends on the woman. You have sometimes 5-day bleed, 7-day bleed. So you count that. Now, once that bleed is done, that's still follicular phase. And that's a time when you're bleeding. There should be reduced exercise, if none at all. Why? Because this is, though we feel some women are very lucky, they don't have any signs of PMS. They can run, they can jog, but still, honestly, bleeding is heavy on the body. It's stressful to the body, though we may not, though some of us are lucky, again, we don't have PMS, you know? Some women do, though. They experience heavy bleeding, cramping, headache, moody. They feel like they've gained 50 pounds, you know, all of these things. But there are some women that don't experience any of that, and they're running, they're lifting, they're doing intense workout. And they asked me, Robin, should I continue to do that? And I said, I would not. I would instead do long walks. You want to go out and walk 30 minutes. Yin yoga would be great because then you're working on your pelvic floor, you're letting the fluid stretch, things like that, but nothing intensive.
But wouldn't you say that the luteal phase, like the before the period, is the hardest, at least for mine?
The premenstrual phase.
Yeah,
yes.
The premenstrual phase is when I really need to take it easy. And then first day of the period, but then after that, I feel like I'm good to go.
Yes.
Like it's just right, you know, the hormones. And
and you probably feel like, wow, my skin is clear. I'm ready to socialize.
But even when I'm still bleeding,
You're already picking up.
Yeah,
yes.
It's really fast. Like, and first day of the bleed, it's already like, okay, life is good now.
Yeah, yeah. So, but it was hardest before.
Yeah, so before is the hardest part where I have to really be mindful about my gym time.
And that's beautiful you mentioned this, because why? A lot of people go, why is the week before my period, Robin? I'm like a monster. It's like,
I'm hungry. I want to sleep.
Cravings. Leave me alone. I don't want you even looking at me. Yes. And this is due again to your hormones. It's really your estrogen, your progesterone, testosterone. So the 1 week before you get your hormones, we're talking that basically, Elena, most, if not all of your hormones are now dropping to zero. It's like if it was here, it's now all going down, down, down. So by the time the day before your day one, you basically have nothing.
Yeah.
However, in the backdrop of things, your brain, your hypothalamus is already getting ready. It's already signaling from your hypothalamus to your pituitary gland to your gonads, which is your reproductive system, that, hey, you know, in 2 days, Elena, Robin, it's time. We're getting ready to beef up the estrogen. It knows, even though it's zero. So this is the fascinating thing about our endocrine system. Every time we think that it's forgotten, it's already working behind the scenes. It's working behind the shadows because it knows that, hey, in 15, 14 days, Elena is going to ovulate, because this is what our period is for. Someone asked me, Robin, what the hell is our period for? Why do women have to bleed every month? And I go, well, what is it really for? It's to bring forth new life. If you don't have your period, you can't bring forth new life, right? So the premenstrual week is difficult because everything is going on. You may even notice you feel old, you look old, your skin is dry, you feel humongous. And these hormones, estrogen and progesterone, these are the two sex hormones that are really creating a lot of things in the body. It's affecting your behavior. It's affecting your mood. It's affecting the way you think. It's affecting our weight. So if we don't have much estrogen or progesterone, we could actually begin to bloat very big here. And this is a unique characteristic or a trait of perimenopausal women. We're all talking. We're like, I used to be a size 4. Now I'm a size 8. I'm going on a size 10. And I have now a humongous belly when I used to have, you know, chopboard abs. And again, why? And then we go back, well, our hormones are fluctuating. Unlike when we're in our 30s, everything was a bit more stable. Mm-hmm. So you have those phases, right? And it happens in our cycle too. So our cycle, Elena, is very cyclical, right? There's never, like men, their hormones are like this.
Yeah.
With women, if you look at our charts, we are like, especially in perimenopause, in reproductive years, there is still an ebb and flow. We can kind of, it's predictable because of the cycle. However, in perimenopause, it is just like, I've seen charts of women and it's just like, you know, it's going like this and their behavior is also going like this. So it's really fascinating. And I think we have underestimated the effect of our hormones in how we respond and react to our life and our environment.
I feel like we could be talking about only one phase of the cycle for the whole podcast, but let's just go to the other phases and then we can talk about what happens when you have PCOS and all of these, like, because it's not only that in perimenopause that you can have disturbances. There are so many women who don't have a regular cycle.
Right.
And I've lost my period 3 times already. And we can talk about that later on. So bleed.
Okay, so you have your bleed and then day 7, let's say it's gone and you're feeling great, as you said, right? Because now what is going on behind the scenes? Estrogen is slowly moving up. Testosterone is shooting up. So those two together, estrogen and testosterone, it's a perfect storm for being sociable, for being active, for feeling, you know, feeling sexy even. And then when we hit day 13, 14, 15, that's a time we're ovulating. And that's when testosterone is at its peak, right? And you're feeling really like, I want to meet someone. I want to explore. I want to have fun. I want a honeymoon. And what goes on, though, about progesterone, it's slowly building up. But progesterone actually really shoots up when there is conception, meaning if you made love with your partner and you're trying to get pregnant and there is that moment when the sperm and egg meet, then the progesterone goes all out. Now, however, if it doesn't, then, you know, it basically breaks down and then it comes out and then it you know, the endometrial lining, which is produced by estrogen, releases our period. And then we go through our period. And the week before our period, I call that the premenstrual phase. And this is another phase where a lot of us, again, feel the bloatedness, the cravings. And it is a challenging week. Why? Because our hormones are virtually zero. So if you do feel extreme fatigue, you feel cranky, there, you know, foods that you don't usually like, suddenly you start craving it. It's also induced by the fact that certain hormones that we're used to are no longer there.
And you should be eating more during that phase. And I feel like this is a phase where you should really watch your workouts, because in my past, if I don't watch it, if I like work out really intensively, then my period gets delayed because of the...
Very good. Yeah. That's good. That's...
And also it's normal to want more snacks, to want chocolate, right? For the yes. magnesium and for the cramps.
Yes. Yes.
So I feel like that's important to say. And also for women who are not trying to conceive, to know that actually your ovulation, like when your egg is really like ready, it's like, what, 48 hours? And then
yes.
it keeps decreasing.
Yes.
So it's actually that we're not that fertile as we think.
Right.
It's just that the sperm has like validity up to 7 days.
Yes.
So I guess to have that in mind, if you're trying to, maybe you can
conceive.
Talk more about the conception.
Yeah. Well, if you're trying to get pregnant and... you know, you really want to target that, I would recommend for women who are in their reproductive years to start trying by even day 13. Go every day. 13, 14, 15, 16 even. I'm sure your partner would be very, very thrilled and happy, right? But, you know, also at the same time, I do believe that we shouldn't stress and obsess about it, because the body, you can't lie,
yeah.
right?
If you're
body,
in stress, you can't really conceive.
It just doesn't work. I've seen it. I just say, you know what, just let go and surrender. And when that happens, magic happens. But the more we obsess and we are very robotic about it, it just doesn't seem to work, no matter how wonderful and healthy our eggs are. So, yeah, that's basically what goes on.
Yeah, my cycle is crazy. If I mm-hmm. am too stressed or my body weight drops below a certain amount, which is still in a normal BMI range, but for my body, I've just tested through like natural living mm-hmm. what happened. Like if I lost weight and I exercised more, then my cycle would just be gone. So that's like, for some women, they're still able to have the cycle, but you can have a cycle and not ovulate still, right? So I feel like that's important, because women think, I have a regular cycle, everything is, you know, regular, but they might not be ovulating.
That is such an amazing story that you just shared, Elena. That is a fact. Just because we have a period doesn't mean we're ovulating. So when we say ovulating, what does that really mean? It means that we have incurred progesterone, right? Meaning the progesterone was able to be produced out from the ovaries. You get what I mean? And I want to share this thing based on the women and the research that I've been doing. Progesterone, Elena, is not as easy as 1, 2, 3. And this is why you said, Robin, I notice when I'm on my luteal phase or the week before my period, I can't go 2 out, or I lose my period, or it gets delayed. And one thing I have to share in this modern day and age, because we have so much external stress in our life, to build and make progesterone was not as easy as the time of our great ancestors, because the stress in their life was very stressful. I will not disagree with that, because our great grandparents and grandparents were going through war. Our grandfather had to endure war. Our grandmother had to endure, you know, famine and all that. So the stress is very different. But the stress and the environmental stress is what we're up against now. So we have more toxins. We are inhaling a lot more toxins. Our food, our water, everything, even our pans that we cook with, Elena. So if you're using Teflon, there is a lot of chemicals and endocrine disruptors by using a Teflon pan, unfortunately.
BPA. Oh, like
water.
That's another thing. Like me living in Bali, I'm just a bit wary of that because in Europe, you still have more regulations, safety. And here, people are using like aluminum pots everywhere, you know.
Right, right.
Plastic bottles.
Yeah.
Even they have toxic coverings for the roofs. Like
yes.
These kind of things. So that's, yeah, definitely the
right?
environmental shock. But there's still war.
Yeah.
Plus all of that.
So this is a lot on the body, but look how amazing and resilient our body is too. I do believe that our DNA does mutate and change through the millennia. So I think the human design of our body physically will be capable to metabolize these toxins. However, for our hormones, we're struggling. Why is it that so many women have fertility issues? And when we say fertility, to sustain the pregnancy as well. So what hormone actually keeps the pregnancy? What hormone keeps the pregnancy, and we need that for fertility? It's progesterone, from the word progest, pregnant, right? And progesterone, I call, Elena, now, it is the, I call this in a lot of my workshops, it is a high maintenance hormone. It's like having a high maintenance girlfriend or high maintenance
okay.
wife. Why? Why is progesterone compared to estrogen is like, she's like the girl who can just sit. Estrogen is like the girl who can sit and things will just continue to build with effortlessly. So estrogen is effortless. It happens no matter what we do.
And I feel like a lot of people have estrogen dominance and
Bingo.
They have too much estrogen because they don't
90%.
Yeah, they can't detoxify estrogen as well. That's linked
right?
to the detoxifying pathways, right?
Yes, yes, Elena. And progesterone is the high maintenance hormone, I call. Why? It's much harder for us to produce progesterone now because of the fact, again, of the environmental toxins, the foods we're eating, the water we're drinking, and the enemy itself is us, our thoughts, our internal stresses, our ability to be able to be emotionally resilient, to self-regulate because, again, of the modern technology. You know, you're on your laptop, you're on your cell phone, you get stressed by looking at something, we get triggered, and that eats us up if we're not able to, you know, to work with it or to witness it and to admit to ourselves that I need to work on myself. These all affect the biochemistry of our body and our hormones. So the more cortisol we produce, the less progesterone we make. And there is a thing called pregnenolone or progesterone steel. And this is really a name for it, where cortisol will steal away the hormone that's supposed to be made for your progesterone. But every time my body is stressed or it goes up, instead of my body making progesterone, it's going to say, no, we're gonna choose survival over reproduction.
Always.
Always. The body will always choose survival over procreation if it knows that Robin's body right now needs to survive, she's not ready to reproduce a baby.
And I feel like we can be in such a chronic state of stress that we don't even realize we're stressed.
Right.
Because
right.
from the moment we wake up, if we already like immediately pick up our phones, there's immediate stressors from that. We always
yeah.
are stimulated.
Yes.
And I only realized that when I went to a 10-day Vipassana where I had nothing. And then I realized how cool my mind can be. But
yeah.
now that I'm back to figure out how to maintain that state. And, you know, the whole polyvagal theory talks about
right.
the nervous system. And interesting.
It's very interesting. Yeah. So for you to be able to take yourself voluntarily out and say, no, I'm going to do 10 days where I'm going to cut from that. That's amazing. That's your ability now to self-regulate, and you're strengthening your nervous system. You're taking ownership and self-responsibility over your emotions and over your mental health. Now, we people who don't have that, not because we're not good, I'm going to include myself, right? Because I don't want to come as a know-it-all, but you know, we have to learn this. We also have to, and I think, Elena, this is like still part of hormones. The thing that the youth have to understand now is we want everything immediate. We want immediate gratification, instant gratification. We want instant results. And society now is encouraging that we don't work hard for those results. Everything has to be instant. I want to be rich fast. I want to be beautiful fast. I want everything fast. So if we continue to go on this path, every time we come across stress, it's like it shoots up, right? Adrenals go, oh, it's stress, because we're no longer used to working hard for things. Do you get what I mean?
Mm-hmm. That's an interesting way to put it.
Right?
Because it seems kind of, if I'm working really hard for it, then I'm getting stressed. But you're saying the opposite.
No, I'm saying if everything in our life is like so fast, I want to lose weight, I'm just going to go get an operation. But even if you get a liposuction and you're not moving your body, it doesn't mean you're a sign of health.
Yeah, that's true.
Right? So even if I'm taking all the high quality supplements that cost thousands of dollars, if I'm not eating healthy,
or sleeping,
eating proper food, those supplements will not work. Trust me, they will work for 60 days. After that, you're back. And I've seen this rebound and rebound, this vicious cycle. So what I'm just trying to say is, all these things in life are great that we can have it at the snap of our fingers, but let's not lose the value of hard work, the value of not going through the shortcut, but going through that process, because going through that process makes you a better human being. And when you're a better human being, your body can also adjust to difficulties in life. And then your hormones are like, you know what? It's a tough time, but since Robin has learned the art of self-regulation and she knows that, you know, this doesn't feel safe. I have to now get out of this situation instead of I'm working and this work is making me really suffer.
Oh, so that's
Do you
what
get
you mean?
What I mean?
Yeah, now I know what you mean, that working hard as if in like sitting in stillness and learning to regulate yourself and not like instant regulation. That's why, you know, I will take a drug. That's why I feel like it's so easy to, and that people are doing like, you know, microdosing. I'm not against it, but I feel like that's an easy fix.
Yes. Or again, weight loss, right? There's a lot of weight loss supplements, which are very harmful, Elena, harmful to the endocrine system, harmful to the gut. And again, yeah, you're going to notice you're going to lose weight maybe 3 months. And then all of a sudden, you know, something happens in life and you're taking all of these pills, but your weight goes up. And not only supplements, Elena, I've witnessed with my own eyes, even hormone replacement therapy. Women who are in menopause who go on hormone replacement therapy and they're depressed, they're angry, they want to kill their husbands, they want to, you know, just go crazy. They take their HRT and life is great again. And then they hit the roof, right? That ceiling level of like, I've reached this highest that I can. I can't go anymore on my HRT. And a traumatic life experience happens. Let's say they go through a divorce or they fall out of a business relationship and their life turns 360 degree upside down. They come back to me and they say, Robin, my HRT is not working anymore. What the heck is going on? I'm gaining weight. I can't sleep. My hot flashes. Can you recommend to up the dose? Can you tell my doctor? Or they go to their doctor. Their doctor says, I want more and more and more. The doctor increases the amount of HRT, but nothing is changing. I've seen that myself. So this is what I mean, Elena. No amount of HRT, no amount of supplements, no amount of liposuction and all of these instant quick fixes will resolve and will not be a sustainable lifelong health journey. Because again, the body knows. We cannot lie to our body.
It totally makes sense what you're saying. And I feel like listeners to this podcast, from the interactions that I've been having, people are really interested in this, you know, slow way of living, in this true sense of vitality, where I'm connected with myself and with the hormones. And people are already eating, you know, a good diet, like the women who come to my programs.
Right.
I do their diary assessments, their food diary assessments, and I see that they're relatively like doing good in that regard. They're trying to include more vegetables, leafy greens. I mean, I feel like most women are, they would benefit from more leafy greens.
Definitely.
That definitely helps with the detoxification and stuff. But what else is there for them to do if they're already, you know, trying to sleep well, their diet, like they have, they eat legumes, they eat grains, they eat leafy vegetables, other vegetables. They have, you know, a pretty well-balanced diet from healthy fats. And they manage their sleep as best as they can, to go to bed at the same time, to wake up at the same time, to do some sort of movement, to go outside, do maybe some Pilates, yoga, go to the gym, some classes. What else is there for them, like meditation maybe as well for managing? What else would you say benefit them? For example, for those who don't have the regular periods because of their progesterone issues.
Okay, so number one, if let's say we're going to go extreme, Elena, let's say you've hit amenorrhea. Amenorrhea is when you have not had your period more than 3 months.
I've had that.
And that is very, like, women who are aware of their body and that happens, it is scary, right? You have to admit, yeah. Elena, right? Especially if you've been normal all your life and you've been educated and you know that the menstrual cycle is your seventh vital sign. So you know how you have vital sign, you have your heartbeat, your you know, the vital signs of your blood pressure. For us women, there's number seven and it's the menstrual cycle. So another sign of a good, balanced health is that you have your monthly period. So a woman, let's say, who loses her period could be a number of things. Number one, she's not eating enough, meaning she may be eating but deprived of a nutrient-dense diet, meaning, again, you've got healthy fats. And when we say hormones, Elena, what makes hormones? Cholesterol is the building block of hormones. So if a woman goes on a low-fat diet, she's reducing her chances of having hormone balance. And when we say cholesterol, I'm not talking about eating, you know, French fries and high fatty foods. You should have healthy fats, avocados, coconut oil, olive oil, things like that, you know, salmon, healthy fats, nutrient-dense fats.
Yeah, I feel like there's a lot of controversy around fats, especially like coconut oil, you know, because it's saturated fat and what it does to the heart. Yeah, I think olive oil, from my research, would be one of the best ones.
Yes.
Nuts, seeds, obviously. I'm trying to include mostly whole foods.
Yes.
Then the fish. It has so many like environmental and also the heavy metal.
Right.
If you're sourcing for a fish, to like, how do you source a good fish? It's really hard in most areas of the of the world. And then omega-3 fats.
Omega-3 is very good. Yeah, vitamin E. Now these things are needed for us women and men, but more for us for women, especially if we've lost our period. So usually, a woman who's lost her period, I would definitely look at what have you been eating the past 3 months, and then after that, I would have her tested for her thyroid, the thyroid levels, her TSH, her T4, is it converting to T3, and also the stress. Again, stress is probably the number one, more than the food.
It's sometimes so crazy because for me, when I lost my period, I'm like, I'm meditating, I'm doing yoga, I'm sleeping well. I lost my period because I was, like I said, my weight got reduced and I was exercising a bit more. And I was on a raw vegan diet. And for me, that was like, I couldn't eat enough on a raw food diet, and then my body couldn't digest well, and I was always bloated, and I was like, what's happening? And all these gurus have been telling me that it's good for you, and you're not supposed to have your period. Look, gorillas don't have periods.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh, I've never heard of that before.
They're like, oh, you're not
supposed to. Are they men or women?
Both. Oh, and they're like, God. I didn't have my period, but I
still thought it was normal.
Yeah, and I didn't have my period for 2 years.
Crazy.
Yeah, and they've been like, I still got a baby, even though I didn't have my period because I was still ovulating.
Yeah.
And all these, you know, misconceptions. So that's why hearing like, oh, you need to reduce your stress, it's kind of causing more stress, you know?
Right.
So I'm like, I'm already doing so much to reduce the stress. How do I not stress even more?
Yeah.
And that kind of causes more stress. I just wanted to acknowledge that because
I think all of us, I've experienced that when someone says, you know, but probably you're wondering, Robin, why is stress causing us to lose our period? What is the stress have anything to do with the reproductive organs? When we say stress is stemmed from what exactly?
Mind.
The thoughts.
Yeah.
But the hypothalamus, this little piece in our brain, is the one, I call it the CEO, right? It's the control center that tells all of the hormones to do its job. So every time I'm stressed, the hypothalamus and the pituitary gland is the second. It's the CFO, I call it, the chief. Finance office, CFO, right? So you've got your hypothalamus and then your pituitary. These two work together. And these two are the ones in charge of saying, okay, Elena, it's time for Elena. She's going to ovulate. But oh no, Elena, no, let's not release the luteinizing hormone and the follicular stimulating hormone because Elena is constantly stressed. Look, listen to her. The brain knows. It's smart, right? It's there.
That's how we talk to ourselves.
So instead, the hypothalamus says, uh-oh, Elena is stressed. She's stressed. She's meditating. But deep inside, she say, I'm still stressed. You can't lie.
Yeah.
So instead, you know what the hypothalamus is going to say? She needs to run. She needs the adrenals. She needs...
The shutdown. Or she can't change anything and then she goes into a shutdown.
She's going to run.
Everything is going
to... Elena needs to run. So she needs these hormones instead of the progesterone, the luteinizing hormone, and all these amazing, sexy hormones. Because instead, Elena feels she's in danger and there's a big, big tiger after her. But the tiger nowadays isn't literally a tiger. It could be our cell phone. It could be something that we had a discussion with a friend or a family member. So what is the best way? Again, we come back to what we just said earlier, to be able to self-regulate, to know when that, you know, I'm being stressed, I need to do my self-care. And to admit that I am feeling weak right now. I need help. And again, we're brought in a day and age where we can't share our weakness because then we look weak.
That's what I was about to say, that actually I feel like it's not about the meditation now. It's more about connection because what is regulating to our systems is the human connection. And when we have that, when we have people who are regulated around us, we co-regulate.
Right.
And also about the nervous system.
Beautiful.
The fight or flight, you know, to run.
Yeah.
But if my body keeps seeing that I'm not running, it's not getting resolved, I'm going to go into the shutdown. So it's not, people sometimes feel like if I'm stressed, then I have to be agitated, I have to be angry, I have to be, you know, restless.
Constantly thinking.
But it's no, sometimes you're like, getting into this dorsal vagal state where you're apathetic. You don't want to do anything. You don't have any energy.
Yes.
And that is a nervous response where you're just freeze. You know, like animals where they pretend to be dead.
Yeah.
So the same can happen to us. So I feel like, and then the self-care. I recorded an episode with Tamara previously about self-care and how sometimes self-care is actually going to exercise and doing something active to get ourselves out of that dorsal.
Well, movement is probably one of the best ways.
De-stressors.
Because if you notice, people who are also disassociating with whatever trauma they carry, what do they normally do? They like to, what you say, shut down. They like to just be in bed all day.
Isolate.
They don't want to talk to anybody. They don't feel the need to be seen, to be heard. It's because they've reached that point of dissociation. They don't even want to associate with themselves because there's just so much pain. So all of these things affect the biochemical mechanisms of our hormones. And remember, when we say sexual hormones, estrogen, progesterone, they influence neurotransmitters. They influence it to such high degree that, again, women in menopause, perimenopause, usually come out as, oh, she's going crazy. She's going to leave her husband, leave her family after 25 years, right? And we wonder, what is going on?
And the middle age crisis coincides with that. Okay, so finish off with the reproductive years.
Okay.
Women who have amenorrhea, they have stress response, they're not eating enough. Not eating enough, exercising too much, not sleeping enough, not taking good care. What else would you say?
And also, it could also be underlying health conditions. As I said, I would definitely check for thyroid. Sometimes it could be an autoimmune problem. They mostly might have hypothyroid, because women who do have hypothyroidism, that will definitely affect the ovulation and their menstrual cycle. Some women who have hypothyroid skip their periods normally. Right. So these things. So with amenorrhea, one thing that I would test for those. And then after that, I would completely look into, again, their nourishment, what they're eating. And the beauty of what's going on now, especially if you look through functional nutrition, functional medicine, TCM and Ayurveda, is there's always something from the earth, something from Mother Earth, meaning herbs. I love using herbs, especially when I look at a woman and I say, I'm resonating with this herb. I want you to try it, because I don't know your body, Elena, right? So let's say we work together and say, Robin, I'm missing my period. I will tell Elena, these are some herbs, but I want you to read about it first. Mm-hmm. Read about it, feel it into your body, and then buy one and see how you react with it. I don't really like these supplements that have like 10 million herbs in one capsule. No, I strongly believe that one specific herb and maybe one other herb can be a spectrum just for Elena's body.
Okay, interesting.
I don't believe that one capsule with 10 million herbs might be beneficial.
What would you say then? What kind of herbs can the listeners look into?
Okay, so definitely for it, let's say you've been missing your period, would be the most common, Elena, would be chasteberry or Vitex.
Vitex, I have that.
Vitex has been proven time and time again through even immense research. So there's a signal when you take this herb, it's not that it builds progesterone. No. I want to make that clear. People think I'm going to take Vitex, it's going to build the progesterone like that. No, it's when it metabolizes in the body, there's a signal that this herb provides to the brain. And then think of it like the hypothalamus receives this book, and now it's reading this herb and it's saying, okay, well, it's giving me this book every day, which is the Vitex. And now I'm reading it more, and now I can say, okay, hypothalamus, it's time to give Elena progesterone again.
Okay.
I kind of think of it as analogy of like that these herbs provide certain chemicals that our brain, our neurotransmitters receive, and then it gives that signal. So it's not literally like food we eat and it's going to just happen.
Yeah, of course. This is more complex. So would you say to first take like more in the beginning and then ease off the dose, right? Not to have it all the time.
Right. So Elena, with Vitex, the minimum number of months you should take it is minimum 3 months.
Yeah.
Up to maximum 6 months, then you must stop. And usually, with a proper diet, I've seen it, Vitex does work.
And for also, not only to get back the periods, but also to increase the fertility for women who want to either freeze their eggs or conceive, right?
Yes. So you have Vitex is very good. There's many, but for progesterone, Vitex is probably the herb that's been most studied.
Yeah,
and
that's
then increase your vitamin C has been proven. So again, I would go back to whole foods first before supplementing. So you'd want to increase citrus fruits. Broccoli is very good. That is very high in vitamin
C. Peppers.
Yes.
What about CoQ10? I've read a lot of research about that improving the...
Well, CoQ10 is more about, it's a very strong antioxidant. So if it does create like you feel like, okay, my period is back, it's probably also because it's a very strong antioxidant. When we say antioxidant, what does it do? It changes the oxidative stress in the body. And when we say oxidative stress, it means you've got toxins that's aging your body. So if you want to like say, oh, Robin, my mom, the same perimenopause, and she's all about anti-aging, then I would look at increasing antioxidants in my nutrition and my supplements.
And the best way, plants, right?
Definitely. I agree with you. Plant-based is the way for, and fruits, of course.
Yeah. Lovely. Okay. So then there's the PCOS, the polycystic ovarian syndrome, that we can touch a little bit. So what have you,
Now, with polycystic ovarian syndrome, the number one culprit here would really be your diet.
Because it's basically insulin resistance, right?
Yes.
That's what they say. It's like a different form of diabetes, even some
yes.
people.
Yes. And sometimes we it's not our fault. I want to just say many of these, challenges we go through as women is really not our fault. Sometimes PCOS is triggered because of our foundation and how we were taught to eat because of our family. And usually the American standard diet is not helping.
The sad diet.
The very, very sad diet. So if you are eating French fries, burgers, microwave food, processed food, donuts, ice cream all day, fraps.
I don't feel like people eating that way would listen to this podcast.
Yeah. So that will really affect insulin levels. And sometimes, Elena, you could be eating well and you still go through insulin resistance.
Yeah, that's the thing. I have friends who have PCOS, and when I look at their diet, they're like, I had actually people in my nutrition degree in university. They were eating well, but they still had PCOS.
Yeah, and that could, again, as I said, that sometimes it's not even that, right? And that could be the time when it's just genetics. That could also be if your family has, both parents usually have, let's say, diabetes in their family, that does sometimes affect. But I also believe that we can change that. I don't fully believe that because of my mom had it, that I'm going to have it. I'm a living testimony to that. My mom, went through horrible, way younger than me. And I'm already past her age when she was experiencing all those mental health issues because of perimenopause. I have no symptoms of perimenopause except for one thing, Elena, which is fatigue. And it usually happens a week before my period. But I don't have hot flashes. I'm 46. I don't have hot flashes. I don't have anything. But I'm constantly observing myself, meaning I'm aware, okay, Robin, you're having too much of this, or, oh, Robin, you didn't work out. Just a little bit of mindfulness. But otherwise, I think a happy disposition in life is really the secret. How you look at the world around you affects everything.
The outlook. There are so many studies like with breast cancer where they take them on a different perspective. Like some women practice gratitude and then how that changes, or they have a mindfulness practice and how it changes the outcomes of the cancer and the return of it. It's mind-blowing.
Yeah. So with PCOS, if we're looking at diet, I'm just going to come back to that. Look at what you're eating. Reduce. I would go, like, if you have a plate, this is what I would normally teach my clients, portion control. If you have a plate, half of your plate will be your greens. Stick with cruciferous vegetables, all the greens. Make it rainbow if you like, but more greens, which will help the metabolism, right? And then 1/4 of your plate, which is probably just the size of your palm, you look at your protein source. And then another 1/4 would be a tiny amount of healthy grains, right? I would still include grains because you need that for energy. How can that person work out? Because
you do need carbs. Yeah, like women are different than men.
You do need those carbs. Yeah. And there are very healthy carbs, Elena. Even rice.
Starches.
I mean, what becomes bad is when we're having, like, again, the American bread, which is Wonder Bread. That is horrible. If you look at all of the ingredients to that, it's unhealthy. But you have, you know, this big of a sourdough bread is high in probiotics. It's high in fiber. It's not going to mess you up. So just look at your palm. How much should I have? Okay, the shape of my palm, that's it. And you can have this size 3 meals a day. So also remember, insulin isn't, PCOS isn't just about insulin resistance. It's also making sure that your insulin and your glucose levels stay stable.
Yeah, there's this glucose goddess. You probably have seen her.
Yes.
And she has those hacks. Yeah.
I love her.
Like the vinegar before meals, you know, like spices, like cinnamon lowers the sugar. Yeah. Movement, just a little movement with
after
your
you
calves.
Eat.
Yeah, it just does wonders. So little things like that.
So that will really help.
Yeah, I feel like most of the people would benefit from that. Okay, so insulin resistant. So basically PCOS, managing your glucose levels, your insulin, your diet.
Movement after you eat. Because usually also if you notice, Elena, women, unfortunately, with PCOS, they have issues with weight gain. Most of them, my clients are overweight.
Yeah, there's a different subtypes. Like there's the thin PCOS type and then there's
But most are because again the struggle with it, because you know the insulin really does affect. So and then the supplements that could help is berberine is very good.
Yeah.
And inositol, which is B8. So those two things might help. I would put them on last. I would change the diet, look at the workout, and again, your outlook on life. There's always an energetic, emotional component to this.
Yeah, and if you want to try supplements, really research them before. Because I've tried berberine for my glucose levels, and I got hypoglycemia after that.
It works may not actually have needed it.
I don't. But, you know, I'm just curious to try things before I recommend it to my clients.
Yeah.
And I realized, and Dr. Huberman talked about this in his podcast, that he tried berberine and he got a terrible headache after that. So,
berberine.
Yeah, first lifestyle and then only comes the supplements.
Supplements are not the answer immediately. You must change your lifestyle. That's why it's called supplements.
It's supplements, the compliments,
Okay. But just on the note of berberine, inositol is B8 is actually a much healthier supplement if we're going to talk about that compared to berberine.
Yeah.
It's more natural and it helps with fertility. So I recommend inositol much
more. Yeah, I would say that too, because it doesn't have the side effects
as much. No.
Is there anything else you would like to share with women who are struggling with PCOS?
So basically I think the diet is very important and, you know, again, movement for them is probably going to be something that I recommend, because every time you move, again, there's a chemical change that goes on in the body. So those two things, and then, you know, you just really have to focus on stabilizing your sugar levels throughout the day. So meaning if your sugar levels, don't go overboard with the fasting. Some women say, oh, fasting is going to heal my PCOS, but going again overboard with that and your insulin levels and glucose levels aren't stable will make it worse.
Yeah. I learned it the hard way because I previously would be fasting and I realized for me it's much better to eat throughout the day.
I'm the same,
and
Elena.
And have a more stable, yeah.
Yeah, I'm the same. I don't do well with extreme fasting, especially on certain times of my period. So that's another thing.
Yeah, during ovulation, naturally, like, I'm just not that hungry. So, yeah, okay. Whew, I feel like there would be so much more to talk. But, yeah, we can't give all the possible information. So moving forward now to the perimenopause, because that's what you mostly specialize in, as I understand.
Yes.
So what would you say to someone who is going through perimenopause? They maybe started noticing first signs. Maybe they don't know what to look for. Maybe they just think they're aging. That's normal. Mm-hmm. So what are the signs? And maybe then you can cover how they can support themselves in that.
So perimenopause is not just a 1 year or 6 month transition. It actually starts to happen, Elena, even in our late 30s. You could be 35. And you could already be experiencing signs of perimenopause. So when we say perimenopause, it's actually a 10-year transition to menopause.
Wow,
it's not just, it starts in your 40s, even 35 sometimes, and it can go up to the day when you're menopause. So what's the difference with perimenopause and menopause? Perimenopause is that decade journey. Menopause is the day, let's say, for example, March 1, you got your period, and you never got your period until it's been over a year, and it's already March 1 of 2025.
So one year,
that means menopause. That means it's done, right? It's done, right? The suffering or whatever she's going through is done. So what are the symptoms of perimenopause? Usually it starts very subtle, right? Oh, you're going to get a headache every now and then. You're going to get fatigue. You may notice even tenderness, which is like, hey, I had that before, but not this tender. And then the telltale signs is when you're starting to gain weight, which maybe you've always been skinny.
And then, actually a lot of clients come to me like, I'm gaining weight even though I'm eating the same diet or even less.
It's happened to me as well, where I'm not even eating anything more, you know, anymore, babe. I was telling my husband and I'm still gaining weight, and you know, and he goes, oh, I know why, and you know, he knows because he hears me all the time. It's your
well-educated husband.
Yeah, he knows it. So those are the telltale signs. You know, you're gaining weight even though you're still eating the same, if not eating less, and you're still exercising. So it is quite scary. And then you notice that your belly, which used to be again very flat, is now, wait, what's going on? And then you notice your skin is changing. You're not as, you know, you used to be very like, you know, tight. Now you notice things are heading south. I was just talking about this in my Instagram story earlier, how you're noticing, you know, before everything is like tight and uplifting. Now everything is heading down south. And again, because the hormones are not, if your hormones right now, Elena, is like from your feet up to your head, you're 100. When you hit mid 40s, it's still here now. And then by the time you're 50, it's like to the knee.
So what do you do? How do you solve that?
Okay, number one is, I have to be honest, is number one, we embrace the change. Because again, this is something that I had a discussion with, is why does society teach and program and condition women that if I'm 50, I still have to look like I'm 30?
Because of all the celebrity photos where like, oh, she's 50, but she looks like she's 20.
Right? And acts like 22. So this is, if Elena, and I'm going to challenge any scientist and doctor, if that's the case, if I'm 50 and I'm supposed to look like 20, why then are my hormones naturally, biologically, and a natural rhythm and process, why is it decreasing? And why is my body changing? Because
you're supposed to.
Biologically, there is a difference, right? Women are going through what they call their queendom. It's a queen stage where you are going to embody who you truly want to be. Unlike when you're in your 30s, 20s, where you might be still people pleasing. You might still, even though it's against, I don't really want to do it, I'm just going to do it. But when you hit your 40s and 50s, it's like, no. And we are not guilty, and we don't feel any bad. If we don't feel bad by saying no, it's not like that. So it is fun, but at the same time, it does cause, you know, a little bit of friction between each other. But this is the normal change in the body. So you're asking, what can we do, Robin? What do you mean? What can we do to preserve it or to not to increase the symptoms?
Yeah, I guess both, not to increase the symptoms, to have a smoother sail through the journey. And I know it can be very stressful to be gaining weight, because for women and the body image,
right,
it's a whole nother topic.
Right.
And yeah.
Yeah. So this is all, again, dependent on, okay, what changes in a woman's body in our 40s? Insulin resistance is a huge thing. We're going through metabolic syndrome, which is part of insulin, right? So even our cardiovascular health changes, because again, we're not having estrogen enough. We're not gaining the same amount of hormone levels as we used to. So the biggest component, again, here, Elena, is lifestyle. Your everything, and I'm not just going to tap on the foods. It's everything, right? And again, stress. Stress is huge, because your body is already going through the immense stress of the hormones changing.
And what do you classify as stress? Because, for example, now women are conceiving later and later, like even 35.
Right.
And being a mother is, I think, the biggest stressor ever, because you have a baby and, you know,
you're still working sometimes. Women are multitasking, right? They're mothers, they're wives, they're painters, they're working, they're CEOs, they're coaches. So you have to handle all of these different, wear these different hats. So when you say, let's just say this, Elena, let's give an example. Let's say I'm 47 and I'm going through immense perimenopause changes, fluctuations in my body, and I can't sleep at night because I'm going through hot flashes, and I have the AC on at, like, you know, 10 degrees and I'm still sweating.
And you're waking up at 3 a.m.
And I'm waking up at 3 a.m. or I can't sleep. So let's say I went to bed at 10. It's already midnight. I'm sweating. I have the AC up. I have ice water. And I have to wake up at 7 because I have... This is gigantic amount of stress.
So what would you say? Just to ease into it or what else?
So that is a physical stress on the body. And there's more stresses this woman will endure because she has to wake up at 7. Then she has to get to work. But she didn't sleep at all. And now she has to drive an hour or 2 hours in the city to get to work. When she gets to work, she has to deal with 30 different personalities, whom she probably all hates. So do you see, this is the life of a perimenopause woman. This is her reality. And then on top of that, she receives a call that her son in high school, got in trouble, punched someone in the face. So this is like a compilation of different stresses in life. And you, again, can be eating healthy. You could be having HRT. And all of these things are coming onto you. How do you actually handle it, right? And this is, again, why I say the importance of self-regulation, the importance of honoring our boundaries. Mm. And by honoring your boundaries is honoring your health. And when we say honoring your boundaries, is probably one of the most effective ways to increase progesterone. Because progesterone, just going back to this, is a high maintenance hormone. She's a high maintenance.
So you have to treat yourself as a high maintenance woman.
goddess. Like when something isn't really in line with you, and let's say you have an argument with your partner and it's something that really means so much to you, and every time it's something that he can't accept or that he won't work halfway and meet you halfway, then there should be this internal dialogue where you go outside and take a, you know, stroll in the park and say, this has been going on for a year. He doesn't change. Or am I honoring myself? And I wonder why my periods are skipping. Because this is, I'm saying this as an analogy with the perimenopause, because it's kind of the same thing in perimenopause where now you're 45, 46, 4 more years to go to 50, and you're a mother, you're a worker, and maybe those boundaries at home and at the office are not in alignment with who you are anymore.
So it kind of forces us to rediscover ourselves and to value ourselves.
Bingo.
It's a gift in a disguise, you might say.
And then when you start looking at that, you will realize that everything else in your life starts to get organized. Even your things like, I don't want to have salad one day. You're like, you know what? I'm starting to feel better. You have more clear. It's hard to have to think clear when you're in a disarray, you know, when your life is in a disarray.
Yeah.
So I'm just trying to say here that though I work with gut and hormone, I also, when we say holistic, it's not just the physical aspect, Elena. We have to look at your whole life.
I love that so much.
It's all, yeah.
Yeah. People come to my nutrition programs and they expect a meal plan and that's it. But you can't just expect food alone solve all the problems. It's actually sometimes you have to look into relationships, into your hobbies, into valuing yourself, finding, because, you know, also women in their 50s, like, children already grown up. They leave the house and they need to rediscover what they want to do
right.
with their time, because if they've been devoting themselves all their lives to their kids
yeah.
or their careers, and it ends, to rediscover what you really want to do. And
so that's a beautiful thing that you just said, because at 50, let's say you're in menopause and now your family's okay, the children have grown up, it's kind of like, call it the empty nest syndrome, where you know, the nest is empty, and all, you know, as a mother, as a wife, it's just, you've just been taking care of that nest and nurturing and making sure that each member of the family is okay. And now they're grown up, and then you realize, what about me? So I do believe, Elena, on a biological level, that 10-year transition is not a waste. It's to actually give us that 10-year realization before we hit that moment where you just clearly defined that I have 10 years to make sure that when I hit that empty nest, and when I'm 50 and I might be divorced, I might leave my husband, my children, my 3-5 kids may grow up and they're all married and they move to different countries, where will I be? So that 10-year transition, though the hormones are fluctuating, it's also giving you an opportunity to become stronger as a woman and to really open your eyes to, it's pushing you. You're the reduction of the hormones, the fluctuation of the hormones is pushing Elena, is pushing Robin, is pushing you to truly embody who you really want to be. And if you can look at that perimenopause like that, then perimenopause you'll be like, it's like you're a teenager again, but with more money, right?
Sometimes.
With more money and more discipline and more intelligence and more self-regulation and self-responsibility. And by the time you hit menopause 50, you'll be like, I know who I am.
And you can support other women in the change. So you
exactly.
can the cycle. I feel like that's what you're doing. You're now going through this and you're teaching others yes. how to go through that gracefully. And regarding the bio, so now this is a lifestyle, more like inner work, I would say.
Definitely.
Working, you know, traumas, somatic work, whatever works. And then biologically, because I've heard of hormone replacement therapies, even in perimenopause to help menopause. And how that there's new research, because there's been other research that looked at how it was detrimental, but then, you know, and then it stopped. Then now they're doing new research and it's going out. So what would you say for the biological ways, what they can actually support themselves with more?
Okay, so if you are in perimenopause, you're in your 40s and you're thinking of going towards HRT because you're having immense symptoms, or you were taught that, okay, if I take the HRT now, I won't have the symptoms. That's false. That's false. There's no guarantee, right? However, I'm okay with, again, I'm holistic, right? I will always go for a natural. If I can get it through my whole foods first, I will choose that. However, I do believe that bioidentical hormone replacement therapy is probably more of what I would recommend for women who really need support. So when we say hormone replacement therapy versus bioidentical, it just basically means, Elena, the way it was produced, these hormones. So when we say bioidentical, they have the same human molecular identity to your hormones and my hormone. They look exactly like your hormones, your estrogen, your progesterone. And when they hit the estrogen or progesterone receptor, it is the exact same. What is the difference with hormone replacement therapy? It is synthetic. It does not look anything like your natural bioidentical hormone. And for me, that is a huge, huge red flag.
Why would they do that? Why don't they just do identical?
Because there is a patent in the world. And this is a business, Elena. So anything that's naturally found in our world, you cannot patent. And if you cannot patent it, it means prices are low, right?
That's true.
Anything you patent, there's a patent, there's a registered trademark, there's manufacturing cost, and there's marketing. So this is a multi-billion dollar industry. That's why pharmaceuticals and big pharma does what it does.
How do you get a hold of the natural
The natural, well, there's it's called bioidentical progesterone. And actually, I have workshops on bioidentical progesterone for women in perimenopause who are looking, like, because there's not much information about it. I mean, you can research it online, but there's so many different things. And the dosage is also a thing, depending on, you know, what you're going through. So if you are looking for that, it's best to work with, you know, a practitioner who knows those things. So when you say bioidentical progesterone, you can get that very easily as a cream. Okay. And you pump like one pump a day, and you'll do it for women who are still, you know, getting their bleeds. You would follow the natural cycle. So you would put that bioidentical progesterone during your ovulation, day 13, day 14, until day 30.
Okay. So, would that also work for women who are low in progesterone, even in their reproductive
years? Yes, definitely. So Elena, there are some women who get pregnant or who are having a hard time to conceive, and they did their hormone testing, and then they found out that their progesterone is really low. So your doctor, normal doctor, allopathic medicine would say, okay, just take the synthetic. But then you've got now a lot of women who are aware that I don't want the synthetic doctor, I want the bioidentical. So a woman can get a bioidentical. They can go to a compound pharmacy in the United States, Canada, Europe. Here in Bali, there isn't none. But I actually ship bioidentical progesterone from the U.S. I have small shipments that I make because I do have some clients who need it, and they can't get the ones that I specifically like. The ones that I like, Elena, don't have anything. It's pure bioidentical progesterone with fractionated coconut oil. There's a lot of them that have like a multitude. I can't even pronounce it, but I said, why am I going to ingest all of that? And then I'm playing God with hormones. I find that very, very dangerous and very critical. So though more expensive, I don't care, especially if it's hormones, I don't mess with it. So yeah, there are specific hormones, and they have bioidentical estrogen. I don't know much about it, to be honest, because I feel estrogen, again, as I said earlier, you can just be sitting here. She's low maintenance hormone. You could just be, you know, sitting here, and it's progesterone is estrogen is just coming out. But progesterone is very different. It's a high maintenance. I feel like if needed, I don't mind using it. And I am exploring that option in the next few years for myself.
Interesting. And have you seen a link between dairy consumption and hormones?
Excuse me?
Dairy and hormones.
So cow's milk.
Yeah, cow's milk.
I completely would disregard dairy, especially if you already have estrogen dominance. Absolutely no. If you do love dairy as a woman and you already have irregular periods, you're heavy bleeding, you have PMS, you have you know, sore breast, I would just completely stop dairy at all costs. Why? Again, most dairy products, Elena, are infused with antibiotics and a lot of hormones. And it's a good thing if the hormones look like our hormones, they're not. So, and we're talking about dairy, I just also want to say that I have nothing against dairy. But if a woman does feel like she needs to take dairy, it would probably be the best. That is almost the same identical milk as human milk would be goat. Goat, I know it sounds strange, but if you need to go that way and, you know, you just want to make sure that, you know, because when you think about it, just like hormones, right? Bioidentical is the closest. It looks exactly like ours. When we're drinking dairy, that milk and the milk that our mothers produce is completely, it doesn't look anything like ours.
Yeah, but even with the goat milk, like, why would you want to ingest extra hormones?
No, but the raw goat milk is probably much, much better if we're talking about the lesser evil, right? Okay. Because not everybody is plant, not everybody likes. So, you know, we'd be inclusive. But if you're going in that direction, someone asked me, Robin, goat milk or cow's milk?
Of course, goat's milk, yeah.
I would prefer that they do goat milk as long as it's raw, and then you pasteurize it yourself at home because raw is also dangerous with parasites and bacteria.
But I feel like nowadays there's so many varieties of plants milks. Of course, like now, like oat milk, it does raise your
oat
insulin.
Milk is
so,
one of the worst.
Yeah, I wouldn't recommend. Like, people are like, oh, oat milk, like, no, actually, better not. I feel like What would you say?
Elena, I also love oat milk, yeah. but I'll have one oat milk, but I'll make it myself. It's very easy to make.
Yeah, blend it, strain it.
Yeah, and then you don't even need to. Sometimes I like it with, you know, a little bit. But yeah, the normal oat milk, especially the ones in Bali, I don't know about the rest of the world, has tons of chemicals and carrageenan, which basically destroys your gut.
And oil. And
seed oils and a lot of fillers. So almond milk would be a good choice as long as you look at the ingredients. So the more, if you look at the carton and you notice that the ingredients is half of the box, don't buy it.
Well, sometimes they add like, calcium, B12, vitamin A. So don't be afraid of those. They do add also iodine, like what they do in cow's milk to regulate that. But okay.
But there is a hack to that. So you know what I've been doing, Elena, because mm-hmm. again, you know, as much as possible, I want to eat clean at home, right? So I would buy organic almond butter.
Oh, and you blend it with water.
Yeah. So I take like a tablespoon or 2 tablespoons of almond butter, put it in my blender, get distilled water, two large cups. I add a little bit of cinnamon, a little bit of sea salt, blend it for 1 minute. It tastes even better.
I love that. And if you don't have a powerful blender, it works wonders and you don't even have to strain it because
it dissolves. And it's easier and it's cost effective.
Yeah, lovely. Thank you for the tip.
Yeah.
Okay, so cow's milk, a no-go. What about hormones and like eggs and meat?
Okay, so when it comes to diet and women's health, you know, the Mediterranean diet, if we're talking about a specific diet, I always recommend the Mediterranean diet for a woman who has no gut issues. If a woman has small intestinal bacteria overgrowth, has
candida, we haven't touched that.
Yeah, or has symptoms of leaky gut. There are very specific foods, and I would recommend a restricted amount of time, not forever. I always tell my clients to go on a low FODMAP diet.
That saved me big time.
Low FODMAP has been proven. And if it's specific, especially with small intestinal bacteria overgrowth with specific probiotic strains, in 2 weeks, I guarantee symptoms gone, right? If you're focused, if the client is not focused and, you know, jumping from different foods that, you know, then it's going to take a little bit longer.
Yeah.
And I always respect that, whether, you know, plant-based, vegan, I actually don't like labels. I always will say, what you would like for your body type.
What feels best at the moment.
I would never ever say you should become vegan, you should be plant-based. Plant-based, I recommend for people who are going through disease, who are going through cancer.
I'm working with clients who are, you know, over 40, really focusing on protein. And if their digestion supports it, to focus mostly on legumes and green leafy vegetables, and that really works. Also healthy fats.
Right, right.
But have you seen that, because, you know, nowadays meat in restaurants and supermarkets everywhere, it's loaded with antibiotics, with hormones, with, you know, even like the trauma that's involved in the animal producing.
Yeah.
Like, it's really, really hard to get good quality animal products.
Right.
And
it's very expensive.
Yeah.
Like I buy from a shop here in Ubud, and I've noticed it's times two, times three, the prices. So it's not cheap. But anyways, I don't eat everyday meat, right? As I said, I only eat it if I feel it. If I feel like, okay, I'm very, very weak right now, I need something more dense, then I'll go for that. But to get a good organic grass-fed meat, and to know the source, if it's true, because then there's also false advertisement.
Grass-fed, but it's actually not.
No, I've seen that a lot in Asia as well. Even restaurants here, you know, they say, oh, non-GMO or tofu or this is, and then you find out that the tempeh is the GMO. How can we really know everything?
Okay, so the quality for sure. Is there anything else you would like to share because we've been already talking for
2 hours almost.
No, I know it might feel that way, but it hasn't been. But yeah, is there anything else you would like to share what we talked about? Maybe something about, you know, candida, or what do you like to finish off with?
Okay, just a small thing with candida. You know, candida is on the rise also because of the fact, again, of our diet, right? A lot of women aren't aware that, you know, what is the source of candida and how does candida thrive? It thrives on sugar. So women, you know, we are emotional eaters. Women, we love our desserts. We love hanging out with our coffee and tea and having dessert, sharing our dessert. And I don't have it every day, but, you know, it adds up. So the best way, and also the energetic meaning of candida, and I'd like to just touch this even just for a minute, Elena. Okay. It's about when you say candida and UTI and a lot of vaginal issues and I call it the wounded womb issues, is also about, again, going back to honoring our boundaries, right? And when we have these issues with our womb health or our vaginal health, a lot of that has to also do, when we say whole health, energetically, the emotions behind it. And the number one thing I've been seeing with women is honoring those boundaries and really honoring ourselves more and putting, you know, our emotions above and beyond anyone else's. You know, we want to love this person so much. We want to love our work so much. We want to love. But what we usually tend to forget is to love ourselves. And it's really hard to love others if we don't know how to love ourselves, because we're too self-critical. We always say we're not good enough. No one's going to like me enough. If I don't sleep with him, he's not going to love me enough. So these are important things to remember as women supporting women, and I'm all for that, is to sincerely come back to your heart and to always remember how beautiful you are inside and how magnetizing you are to the right people who truly want to get to know you. And when you can get into that kind of mind or headspace, you'll start to notice how candida goes away, UTI goes away. Yeah, seriously.
Yeah, right? For sure. I mean, psychosomatics, it's a big, big thing. And trauma, how that like is linked to belly issues specifically, how there's so much trauma can be stored there, and then the womb even more, and like legacy traumas even, you know. Yeah. Intergenerational.
So that's it. Thank you so much, and congratulations on your work, your amazing work. I love your podcast name, Vitality. It's so important in the world to have that furious positive energy out, and you're changing the outlook of this day by day. So congratulations.
Thank
you,
dear.
Actually, my last
question was about what is vitality for you?
Oh, yeah. So I answered it. Yeah, it's this furious passion. Not just passion. There's passion, but then there's this furious passion. I always say this to my clients. You know, if you want change to happen in your life, you want change to happen in your perimenopause journey, you want the weight loss, you want your energy levels back, you want to feel young again, then there's one thing you always have to remember mentally is, how much do you want it? And will you take no for an answer? If you say, no, I will not take that for an answer, then you're on your way.
Then you will find a way.
You will find a way. So I think that furious passion is a great evidence of vitality in and out, right? So congratulations, Elena, and thank you for your invitation. I loved all your questions and I loved our talk.
Oh, it's always a pleasure talking with you. I always learn new ways and new perspectives of life. And even our pre-talk before the podcast.
Yeah, and our other talk in the cafe before too, about business and stuff.
Right? Yeah, how there's so, and also the holistic view of it, how it's not, you know, I have problems with my belly, then I have to just look at my diet and my digestion. No, it's actually is the trauma and my lifestyle and my relationships. Yeah. My belonging in the world, how I belong with myself, you know, embracing all aspects of myself, all the shadows. So it's like the whole journey
package. So let's say Elena, someone works with Elena And they say, Elena, this is what's going on. I'm gaining weight, but I'm eating well. And then, you know, 2 months later, they say, Elena, nothing has changed. When you're working with a coach or practitioner, you can't just say that is the only aspect of what you're trying to achieve or your weight loss goal or whatever goal, right? There's still many aspects. And I have to continue to remind them this, your clients or even myself, that, you know, hormone balance is not just hormones. And when we say hormones, women, they're always thinking of their ovaries and reproductive system, but hormones is not just here. When you have a problem here, it's usually the whole world, not just the hormones.
Yeah.
So it's the same with coaching and working with clients. So you go to a coach, you go to a practitioner, and thinking your life's going to transform. We are doing our best to get you there, but there are many other aspects to whole health.
Yeah, that's why now I'm actually expanding my field of working, going to more of the somatic practices, internal family systems, hypnotherapy as well.
Yes.
Because I just realized there cannot be change wholeheartedly if there's no change, like internal, external.
That's so true.
Yeah.
That's so true.
So where can people find you? I will put the links, of course, in the description. Yeah. But
so I'm usually just on Instagram at, just look for me, The Natural Mind Body. And then I have a website, www.thenaturalmindbody.com. It's more of a informational blog. I have a lot of information there about menopause, perimenopause, estrogen dominance, weight gain in struggling in our 40s, 50s.
And if you come to Ubud, you can visit her workshops or contact.
Yes,
or...
I will, if I can share, Elena, I will have a workshop this April. And it's going to be more of, how do I say it? Difficult conversations, topics like angry vagina, a wounded womb. And it's just a safe container where women can express their experiences. And we listen. And then at the end, I will provide a more of a physical advice, meaning supplements to help them through whatever it is they're going through. Mm. But energetically, we are all, you know, just going to listen to each other.
I feel like this workshop is very needed in Ubud regarding the whole dating scene here. Yeah. But that's for another round. I'm going to go here. Okay, well, thank you so much for listening. Let me know what you took away from this episode. Maybe something you would like to expand more in future episodes. As we both live here in Ubud, we can. Yeah. And if you found this useful, share with a friend, with another woman who is maybe struggling with some of these issues that we talked about. Or maybe you're a man listening for your women. Like, kudos for you. That's really good. Because men need to be informed of what's happening with women's cycle. To not think like, oh, their women are crazy. Because when you actually know that, like, that would happen with my partner. When I actually educated him about the cycle, he's like, oh my God, you have to go for this every month. And now he understands. He's like, okay, babe, here's... that works. Education is power. Knowledge is power, to know what's happening, to be able to support our mothers, our sisters, our friends. So share that, because sharing is caring. And always when we reflect about what we learned, we kind of get that knowledge inside, because a lot of times when I listen to podcasts, I feel like, oh, I've learned so much. But when I am sharing with someone, I realized how many gaps I have in my knowledge. And by sharing, I can understand and further deepen my knowledge in the field. So share that with this episode, or even like what you learned, in the comments. And look forward to you and see you in the next episode. Bye-bye.